It's the Tiger King. Have you watched the Tiger King? How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Hero.
We have a pretty full show this week, so let's go ahead and get started. Ryan, you had some follow-up for us?
No, I think you had some follow-up for us, Ryan.
No, I think Adam had some follow-up for us.
I think I have some follow-ups. So quick follow-up. We did discuss a little bit of WandaVision and some of the things that were going on as far as where people were having their thoughts of whether Mephisto was actually going to be part of the story or if that was even something they were thinking about. And there was an article that came out, an interview with Jack Schaefer. Basically, she was saying that whether you're on the same page of it or not, that Mephisto's storyline was just a coincidence to even be somewhat even thought about, because she didn't even know about this character while writing the story. This was all new to her. So all coincidence far as any lines that people were drawing to this character, as we know so far.
Insert the meme of Agatha winking.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know if I can believe that. Maybe on some level, sure. Like, you can claim ignorance. But being a part of MCU and you know, directing and producing and stuff, you're going to do your homework, I feel like, right? When you're getting stuff ready.
I would hope so. It always seems like on these movies that they've done like tons and tons of work and research on characters and like all the little details in the Marvel universe. And the fact that she said she didn't even know about the character, it seems kind of surprising to me. I don't know.
Hey, I mean, maybe they're just concealing what they want to do later, but I think they honed in pretty good on what was going on as far as the character development that happened in the comics. So, yeah.
Yeah. Remains to be seen, I guess. But the official stance is no Mephisto babies.
So far.
Precisely.
All right, what do we got next?
Well, I have a little moment of good.
We need some like some audio effects for like moment of good.
Yeah, like some sprinkly sounds.
That would be good. Yep. Do-do-do.
That's it.
Yeah, so I have there it is. I had a nice little story for a repeat segment that I'm trying to get going here, and that's the moment of good. In New Hampshire, a man was out ice skating, and he's an ice skating teacher, so it's not like he was just some random dude out ice skating, but definitely had a lot of experience, but fell through the ice and was essentially flailing and trying to get out of the frozen water. Didn't have his phone with him. No one was around him. He was just out there by himself, you know, calling for help, that kind of thing. Just trying to keep his cool, but remembered like even in this state that he had his Apple Watch on. And so he had Siri call 911 and had them right on the line, and they were there within 5 minutes to get him out of there. So cool story about technology, you know, and saving our lives and being useful. I know often we talk about all the negative things and intrusions that often those devices can be, but this is one of those instances where it's exactly what, you know, Apple set out to do with the watch.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to see, because this isn't an isolated story. There was another story a while back where a man fell off of the side of a cliff trying to ride his bike, and he was waiting for his son. And he got knocked out, and his watch detected that he fell and automatically called the paramedics, and the paramedics got there before his son did. And you know, he was okay, but yeah, it's nice, to see technology, saving lives.
Yeah. There's also a story of a man who, slid face first on the ice, and his watch asked him if everything was okay.
Yeah, and that man, did say that everything was okay. Also, that man was playing a card game this weekend and slapped the table real hard, and because that was part of the game. And the Apple Watch said, "Are you okay? Did you fall?" And that man, being me, said, "No, I'm fine. Thank you."
Just following track record here.
Yeah.
I wonder if it, at some point it's just going to stop worrying about you. Because it's like, oh, no, he's just clumsy.
Yeah, the machine learning is going to be like, nah, he's fine. Yeah. Well, the thing is like, if I believe if you are below a certain age, that feature is turned off automatically. And so I've actually enabled the fall detection feature because I'm like, well, you know, you never know. I'm kind of better safe than sorry type of person.
Kind of ageist. It's like, oh, if you're under 70, you're not going to break your hip.
I could be wrong about that. It might be turned off by default, but I know it's off by default, at least for my age. But yeah, it's a cool feature. And yes, it did go off, Adam, when I face planted trying to sled a couple weeks ago. It was not fun. It was a hard fall, to be fair, but the card game was not.
Yeah, I mean, probably won't do that again by the hair of your chinny chin chin.
I don't have any left.
So on technology run here, going from the Apple Watch, we talk about something I find very interesting is the Switch Pro rumors. I am definitely one of the ones who absolutely enjoy the Nintendo Switch. It is one of my favorite consoles, mainly out of accessibility, and it's Nintendo, so first-party titles always have a warm place in my heart. But there's been a lot of speculation going on. We spoke weeks ago about TCL, Tickle, however you want to spin that, making the mini LED screens for the so-called Switch Pro. As rumors continue, it seems like it's more Samsung than it is TCL. And granted, this is all speculation. There's no like concrete anything announced, but it does. I believe it was Bloomberg. Was it Bloomberg?
Yeah, Bloomberg, I think, had both of these. They had the Samsung rumor and the, and like maybe when it'll launch.
Yeah, it. So Bloomberg's basically saying, like, hey, we think it's going to be out before the end of this year, and then they revise, and now they're thinking it's going to be out before March of next year. But it does,
which is, well, I was gonna say, which is Nintendo's end of fiscal year, so maybe whatever their source was clarified with them.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they have a lot of different speculations on what they think the resolution and such is going to be, but they believe that docked it's going to be 4K.
I wonder how that's going to work. Do you think it's going to be, assuming that this rumor is true, do you think it, they're just going to upscale, or they're going to require that the game makers render two separate resolutions? Because right now it's 1080 when it's docked, but then in the undocked mode, it's only 720. So they're going to have to add like a third resolution to render. It seems like it would hurt the amount of games that might be on the platform. But
well, from my understanding, there, and this is all rumor, like I said, that there was some sort of communication that newer developers were to go for 4K. The screen itself is supposed to be 7 inches this time around too. So that resolution set is also changing for undocked. But if you think about it, if they're doing 4K, they're probably the new chipset's going to be in the dock, cause I assume it's not going to be the same dock, is going to probably upscale what's older. But then again, maybe they'll end up doing like what, Xbox and PlayStation is doing, where, hey, there's free upgrades for those software, you know, these games. There's going to be an update that comes out, you patch it, and you'll have the new resolution for these games.
Yeah, so back to that 7-inch display, I'm looking at the article. It does say that it will start mass production of a 7-inch 720p resolution OLED panel as early as June. So it doesn't sound like, at least according to Samsung is still only making a 700 or 720p resolution LED.
Yeah.
So undocked, it's going to have the same resolution, which sucks. I hate that resolution.
Yeah, but maybe with the screen being slightly bigger, maybe it won't be as bad on the eyes. I don't know, but I would agree. It would be nice to upscale a little bit what's going on in the handheld portion too.
I think it'll be even worse because the larger it is, the more you're going to be able to see the aliasing.
Right, yeah.
I'd kind of wish that they would bump it up to 1080, but I guess whatever they're doing, they aren't going to increase the CPU power in the console itself, maybe?
I wonder if it's cost too, like cost of creating an OLED
and battery
at that, you know? Yeah. Or there's a few things going on there.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. So, I mean, there again, it's all speculation of where it's going, but it does excite me because I do want to see some more improved specs with the Switch. And I love the titles that are on the Switch. And I think there's still going to be a lot more to come, but you know, there's also a big speculation that with COVID, you know, rearing its head possibly to an end, they do think that the video game market is going to start going down because everyone's basically going to have the feels that they want to go out and do things versus sitting at home playing video games. But that may not change. But that's why they're thinking that the Switch is on its way to next year or such, because they think they're trying to level out that differentiating you know, fault.
Yeah, between the Switch and the current next gen console, the PS5 and the Xbox X.
Well, more like keep their goals trending upward regardless of people returning back to not playing games as often or whatever. Not the norm would be that people aren't playing games, but because there's going to be such a, like, I'm one of those people, like, hey, I'm ready to get out and just do things now. I don't even want to touch electronics for a little bit. I assume there's probably a lot more people feeling the same way, more than usual.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that for sure. And right there with you.
So I'm going to mix things up. Speaking of people not playing video games as often, there were some layoffs at Blizzard, Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, the especially on the esports division, it looks like with COVID and with all the seems like dip in especially that segment of esports and the competitions, a big chunk of that division is being laid off. And it said, the article that we have that we linked to, says around like anywhere between like 50 and 190 people or something like that. So there's not like a firm number. But another article, says it, at least 50 were from the esports division. But what's super interesting about this is the stock has actually done really well in the past year. And so in conjunction with that, of course, the CEO is getting a truckload of stock bonuses, upwards of, you know, $200 million. Meanwhile, some Activision employees are getting some severance pay and a $200 gift card to Battle.net.
Whoa.
So quite interesting turn of events there. Yeah.
I would be so pissed if I got laid off from a company and they're like, well, here's a gift card that you can spend
on us
at the company. Yeah.
All these games you helped develop. Yeah, why don't you just keep playing them for us?
So were there any other developers, or is it all like esports layoffs?
Yeah, it's definitely spread across different divisions. But that was one of the ones that were called out specifically just because of the drop in that sector over the last year.
Which is interesting because of everything that's happened during the pandemic, esports were something that was most likely to thrive because regular sports couldn't happen. I know there was like I think ESPN was showing Marble Madness like runs and stuff like that. There's a whole fake sports industry that kind of like got really popular during the pandemic because ESPN didn't have anything to put on TV. And so it, maybe it's that they are kind of hedging their bets, and because at least the headline says live events. So maybe they're focusing on like remote streamed events and less of a big organized gathering.
Yeah. That's what it seems like from what I've read is it's the in-person gaming events that really took the hit. And so, yeah, it's probably not all developers. It's probably some, you know, like events specific positions that they're letting go. But it is an interesting trend because the company has laid off, it said roughly 800 people in 2019. And then another, you know, few hundred in subsequent months, closing its French office. So there's some really interesting stuff in general happening at Blizzard Activision. Especially when you look at the company that they recently acquired, for some of the stuff we've been talking around.
Yeah. Vicarious Visions.
Diablo.
Absorbed into them. I think they were already a part of Activision, but they got absorbed into Blizzard Studios or Blizzard Entertainment.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We'll see, you know, how everything plays out and if it, you know, hurts them in any way. As more information comes out, you know, we'll follow up on it. But yeah, pretty interesting stuff there.
Yeah, they've not really caught too much of a break, it seems, as far as what they've done, employee treatment, things of that nature. But hopefully there's a stronger future for them.
Yeah, just talking about like the video game industry and how those offices work makes me think of Mythic Quest, which I know, Ryan, you've seen that. I watched it this last week. It's a pretty good and funny show that was on Apple TV Plus, and it was done in part with Ubisoft, who I guess their contribution was like the CG like video game scenes and stuff.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that they had the partnership. That's cool. Let's talk about that show sometime.
Yeah, they were in the credits, so I'm not sure what they, you know, had to do with it, but it's a really funny show.
Yeah, I'd like to like actually talk with someone who works at one of those big studios on a game and such, because you hear so many different things. And you're growing up and you're like, oh, that would be like the dream job. I'd love to work on a video game and be part of the studio with all that, you know, designing and cultural feels of it, what you think in your head of what it would be. But then you hear these horror stories where they're like sweatshops and people are like really turned over sideways trying to get stuff done, and it's just a head chopping industry from what it sounds like. But I'd just be curious to know how real some of that stuff is.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I do know somebody who worked at Blizzard on the like Battle.net side. I think they've got their name in the credits for like StarCraft 2 or something somewhere. Maybe. I'm trying to remember. Or Heroes of the Storm, I think it might be, because it was more recent. But anyway, they didn't work there for that long, maybe like a year or so. So I don't know what the churn is or anything like that. But
yeah, if there are anything like other media companies, I'm sure that there's some stuff that I have some experience with. There's a lot of bureaucratic stuff that you're like, oh, this is so cool. Look at these things that we make and these stuff that people consume. And then you know, it's kind of like watching the sausage get made, as the old adage goes.
Speaking of sausage, what's going on Netflix?
I don't know how that transition works, but it does. Well, I think it may be coming to an end, the sharing of accounts and passwords for streaming services. Well, Netflix, at least. Turns out they started testing a new, I guess you could call it a feature, if you are trying to crack down on this, to where it's asking, you know, segments of users to verify their account. and it sends a text message with like some verification info. And obviously, if let's say you're leeching your friend's account or your ex person's account, you're not going to have access to that. And so it's trying to push people to getting their own accounts. However, a lot of the users said that you can just hit verify later and it lets you skip it. And they haven't seen that pop up since. So it seems like it's a very soft release of this so far. And in the article, one of the articles that we linked to, they talk about how previously Netflix has kind of used the sharing as a almost like a marketing tool, because they say that in a lot of their analytics, if someone shares an account, they're actually more likely to sign up for their own account at some point in time. So either the speculation is that has changed and some of those metrics are actually declining. I mean, they do have more competitors now that are coming out swinging pretty hard. You know, Disney's hit their goals within, you know, the first year that they were looking at, 2 or 3 years for hitting. So it seems like they're starting to get a little more aggressive.
Yeah, I wonder, like, what they're using. Is it just like a push notification, or a text message to verify? Because, like, if you got that message, and, I mean, couldn't you just, like, well, I guess it would be on the host account would get it.
Right, that's exactly it. So you, like, if you're watching, let's say you're on your device, it'll pop up and say, hey, I'll actually read it. Start your own Netflix for free today. If you don't live with the owner of this account, you need your own account to keep watching. And then it gives you a few different options, and it says, is this your account? We'll send you a verification code. And so you can email it or text or hit verify later. So it's using location data, obviously, probably some way that they're, you know, counting those metrics of most active IPs or something like that and correlating that with, oh, this must be the account owner or this is not. So you could, in theory, be like, hey, bro, if you still have a relationship with the person, can you text me that code? You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, everybody in college is like, hey, I just got this verification thing. Can you send me the two-factor? Okay, done. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, it's probably a good cleanup, too. So think about, like, you went somewhere, probably not a hotel is probably not a good example, but you went over to some friend's house or whatever. You did sign in. You forgot about it. You left it there. And it's an active account that you know, unless you get on the site and reject it because you remembered it, it's just a floating account, right?
Yeah, well, Netflix does have a feature. I don't know if they're the only ones that do have this, but it's one of the ones I've only seen where you can go in and say, sign me out of all my places I'm signed in.
Yeah, Apple does that too, because they have like a limit on device authorizations. So Apple does that. I think Hulu, I think the majority of them do. Yeah.
Most of them do, but you have to think about that, right? You got to be the person to constantly think, well, maybe I did sign in a couple places. I don't really need that to be. And at least if they're doing this and doing locational set, it'll, in a sense, automatically stop those other places if they don't have your two-factor.
Yeah. You know who doesn't do that? Who encourages sharing? Plex with Plex Pass. Now, Plex, if you were sponsoring this week, which you're not, I would go on and talk about how much I love Plex, but I'm just going to leave this here and we're going to keep going.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I don't like Netflix as a company, and I don't like a majority of their videos. They've got some really good stuff, but most of their stuff is like TLC trash to me. So,
yeah, most of it's, the reason we have it is kid stuff at this point. Like, well, I don't really watch it too often anymore. There's a couple shows, but it feels like they haven't been producing them a lot lately. And
yeah, Stranger Things is the show I love on there. Queen's Gambit was really good too, but it's not like they consistently have something that I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to watch that. And normally it's like, it's the Tiger King. Have you watched Tiger King? And I'm like, I'm not watching that show.
Yeah.
You should, though. But anyway.
No.
I only have two shows that I personally enjoy on Netflix, and that was Stranger Things and The Witcher.
You love that Henry Cavill, huh?
I mean, he is pretty BA.
Superman.
Yeah, and he does an excellent job as Geralt of Rivia. So if you haven't watched that, you should go watch that because it's good.
I'll add it to the very long list.
I know, right?
Now, which one had Always Sunny that I keep getting told I need to watch it?
Hulu.
You got to watch that. You got to watch it.
It's so good.
I don't have Hulu.
Maybe we will add it to a list of something that I'm going to talk about later.
I mean, it's bingeable.
Yeah, because the episodes are like 20 minutes long.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, it's what, 10 seasons, though, so it still take a while to get.
Oh, I did it. I did it very quickly.
I bet you did.
So it's not on Netflix?
No.
No, I think it's only on Hulu because it's FX.
Gotcha. That is one I need to catch up on. Oh, I think that was the other thing. I did like watching Netflix for some of the older shows like... Well, now I say that, I don't know if it was Netflix that I watched 30 Rock on, but I did binge all of 30 Rock on there.
That was Hulu.
Was it Hulu?
Yep, that was Hulu. Man. Mm-hmm. I think so. Because
NBC.
So like, because they also did The Office and Friends on Netflix. They had the contract. But now like everything is gone if it's NBC for the most part. It's Peacock.
Yeah, a long time ago though, when Hulu first came out, like all those shows were on Hulu because they were NBC partially owned.
Yeah. I think all three of the main networks owned a piece, right? At some point they in did. The early days.
Yeah. Now yeah. Disney owns the majority because they bought Fox.
Yep.
Interesting.
So I think that Hulu will eventually go away.
Yeah. I think it's going to end up being part of Disney Plus stuff because they've already started to bring in Fox shows and everything.
Yeah. But moving on, so for the last couple episodes, we do planning before we do the show, you know, go over what we're talking about, and we have pushed this topic, I don't know how many times, 3 times, 4 times, just because it's such a beefy topic, and it is something that seems not to go away, but just keeps getting more and more news, so it wasn't something that was timely, and that is Apple versus Facebook, and specifically on the privacy front. It seems for a while now there's been a cold war between Apple and Facebook. They used to be friends. Facebook actually used to be integrated into iOS at one point. Where you could add your Facebook friends to your contacts, and you might have even been able to send your contacts to Facebook. But it's been a long time since that's been a thing. And last year at WWDC, Apple announced a feature called App Tracking Transparency. And it seemed to rile Facebook up pretty bad over these last few months. It's a feature that's going to be released in iOS 14.5, which should drop probably any day. It seems like it may drop around in April. There might be an event in April, so it'll probably drop in April. And what this feature is, just like any other private data like location or your microphone or your photos on iOS, when this feature comes out, if an app tries to use any of your data to track you across websites or other apps, then they are going to be required to prompt the user and ask for permission to do that. And that's basically what this feature boils down to. And Facebook didn't like that because they love gobbling up your data and showing people that they're doing this and that they're asking for this. A lot of people are probably going to say no. And so over the last few months, they have been coming out with ads saying how it's going to hurt small businesses And that's come out to be kind of a unproven argument. Harvard Business Review came out and argued point for point what Facebook was saying about it harming small businesses. The data that they provided didn't really actually prove that. It was just kind of anecdata.
I mean, I think what they're doing is the right thing. I think any application that you use or installer that goes, especially on your phone, something that you carry with you everywhere, it should tell you what's happening, and not at a level of like, hey, here's a contract, here's your EULA, read through something that you're never going to read through. Instead, it's more like right in your face. Hey, this is going to happen. You either say yes or no right here. And it should be that way. It should be simplistic for people who do not understand or do not want to pull out their glasses and go through 30 pages of EULA to figure out what's getting ready to happen.
Yeah, because, I mean, really what it comes down to is people don't understand. Normal people don't understand how much data companies steal from them. Their personal private data, like what you bought, where you've been, who you've talked to. I mean, there was a few years back now, I remember an article about a father who got an ad. I can't remember what exactly he got. I don't know if it was an ad or if it was like an email or something, but it was like, oh, congratulations on your baby. And it was like, here, buy these diapers. And it turns out that he got that because his daughter had gone to Target and bought, I think, maybe a pregnancy test or something like that. And so they had the sales data from their Cartwheel app and tied that together like, oh, this person must have a baby. And it turns out she didn't tell her father that she was now pregnant. And, you know, so it's that kind of like leaking of personal information that is really damaging to people, and they don't realize that could happen to them.
Yeah. And that's, your fingers are a little too deep at some of that. You know, it's not, it isn't right because there's too many people that don't understand.
Yeah. I think it, especially when it comes to privacy, you have to bring it down to the lowest like common denominator, as far as, you know, you put the cookies on the lowest shelf, right? Like you want people to understand every piece of what you're doing when it comes to their data. And I think it's almost like they're trying to get people in the mindset of it's not really your data, right? Like a lot of times when we think about it, is they're trying to get everyone to move towards this. Oh, it's just out there. Like I don't own it, and that's fine. Like it's cool. Like I take a picture and I put it on Facebook. I don't need to own that. You know, that kind of thing. It's like, well, you should be thinking about owning that, because now they can take that and use it for whatever they want. And they can use that to sell ads or sell, you know, on the marketplace for personal data to, you know, retarget you and make all this money, all because you want to post a picture of your lunch, right? Which, it's odd.
Yeah. And you saying that actually reminds me of something that I came across today, where if you upload a photo on Facebook or Instagram, it strips out the EXIF data. When the EXIF data is like the data that has like location, time, different, you know, specs of your phone or your camera that took it, those are embedded into the EXIF data on the photo. So when you upload a photo to Facebook or Instagram, that gets stripped out so that somebody can't go on Facebook and download that photo and then see, oh, they were here, they were there, and, you know, kind of be a creep on you. But Facebook can be a creep on you because they don't throw away that metadata. They actually harvest it and then process it, and then they add it to the data that they have tied to your anonymous user or however they tie it to you. So they use the EXIF data that you upload to Facebook. And the thing, their argument is, and Facebook's not the only one, but their argument is that they that Facebook doesn't give this data to anybody else. What they've built their business on is getting this data from all of their users and then becoming the ad vendor for other businesses. So Facebook has all of this data on you, and that becomes a, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, an advantage. This becomes an advantage for them that they have this data and nobody else does, because then they can target you if you're a middle-aged person who likes to buy brown belts that are woven. They'll be able to target you, and then the company that makes brown belts for middle-aged people that are woven can say, I want this type of person, and Facebook goes, oh, here we go, here they are, and they serve you the ad. And so they don't want to share it with other companies, but Ryan, like what you were saying, I think one of the largest one of the first big incidents was when Facebook, a lot of Facebook's data that they had on users was leaked to Cambridge Analytica a couple years ago. So, you know, they're not good stewards of this data.
Exactly.
And I don't like that Facebook does this at all. It's creepy. Google does the same thing. Google hasn't gotten as hot about it as Facebook had. Google has said that they're going to comply, but they've basically come up with their own way to track users. But they don't need to track the individual users. They're going to start using something called Flock, and I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but they basically are going to group a bunch of users into a cohort, and that cohort is a middle-aged person who likes brown belts. So they can target the cohort and not the individual. So Google, I think, has figured a way around it.
It means federated learning of cohorts.
Yeah. And there's I think a white paper on it. I'll put it in the show notes if you really want to read it.
And I think that that's fair to do like an overall grouping versus an individual. And I understand where some of this data helps them for making these type of marketing decisions and such. And I see where that could be healthy in some ways. But either way, the person who is contributing to this data should at least say, yes, I want to, or no.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right. And I agree with that, you should know what is, you know, being harvested from you. But I don't know if people really understand the value of it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
People can't like really understand the minutia, and even I can't. I mean, they throw them into their servers and they're able to squeeze out so much like just data and inferences off of your habits and what you do, that for a normal person, I mean, they're probably not going to be able to be educated enough in computer information systems to know that I shouldn't share this data with this company. They'll just think, okay, whatever.
Right. Yeah. And that's where that's to the point of like making it that lowest, you know, ability to understand in layman's terms, this is what you're doing by saying yes. Right. And I think that's where Apple is heading. I think it's really good. And especially for me, like I look at this and like, there's a whole other layer to this. And that's the fact that I want companies to have to work for me and work for my business. And that's where I lean more towards write better content. Don't just, you know, don't rely on my tracking data that you're buying from someone. Write good content, write, you know, proper things that I'm going to find you in an organic way.
Well, yeah. So, and that's kind of the other thing where Facebook only values engagement. They don't value, they've shown that they don't value the quality of the content or truthiness of the content that is on their service, because Facebook doesn't generate any content. Their users do. But Facebook showed military ads next to insurrection posts when the insurrection happened on January 6th. They were showing like ads for bulletproof vests and gun holsters next to pictures of people, you know, storming Congress. So Facebook doesn't care, and they knew about the violent groups for a long time. So, I mean, Facebook just wants to juice everybody and get, you know, get what they can out of them so that they can make a make a buck selling ads from other companies to those same users. But on the flip side of that, Apple has shown that they are, have been very trustworthy with our data and privacy focused. But I can kind of see where in a couple of years, if they're not careful or if the culture changes, that Apple could turn around and do the same thing, because they, as part of this app transparency framework, they have something called SKAd Network. And if you use SKAd Network, then you do not have to prompt for app tracking transparency. So you don't have to prompt the user to get their data, because at that point, what you're doing as, let's say, Google, I think Google is going to start doing this with Google Analytics, is they will use SKAd Network instead of the unique token that I can't think of the name of right now. But they'll use the SKAd Network, and they're able to, from Apple, to get app install attributions, audio, video, interactive ads, and get ad clicks and get ad clicks in like Safari and WebKit in the future. I don't know if that's implemented yet, but the kind of shady part is Apple is saying, no, all you third parties can't do that, but we are trustworthy with the data. So if we have all the data, you can come to us and ask for us to give the data, and we'll make sure that it's not tied back to anybody else. But all they're doing effectively is moving the data silo from Facebook and Google into Apple. So, I mean, they're not probably tracking everything that the other companies are, but if we as consumers and, you know, governments who make rules and laws protecting consumers, if we're not watching and we're not careful, then I can see Apple doing the same thing, because, you know, they're trying to grow their services revenue.
Yeah. And that's a part that's a little interesting to me, because you can't say, don't trust them, trust me. Like, I don't know. I think what they fear on it is probably how I feel about it. And it would be like, I would rather just unplug from all of it. I'd just forget the technology. See you later.
I mean, if you gave me a choice between Facebook, Google, and Apple, Apple is the easy choice for me to say, okay, like, I trust you now more than I trust them, because they've shown that what they're going to do. But Apple so far has been good about it, but there's always the possibility that they're not. So I think that there should be some kind of like privacy rules, privacy laws, or some kind of restriction on at the government level, as hard as that would be, to protect consumers' privacy data.
Yeah, I think, and I want to dig more into the method that Google's doing. I know that, for instance, in the past with like their home devices, right? Like all of that stuff is anonymized. And when they analyze it to improve their services, they immediately get rid of it. And that's one thing that, like, you know, is good about Google. So I'm wondering if in the future if this new model that they're going to, maybe that becomes what, you know, the government adopts and says, these are our standards for consumer privacy, right? Like if this is the type of thing that works well, it helps businesses, but it doesn't hurt consumers. It's to be seen and fleshed out, of course, and everything. But I think there has to be some kind of model there that the companies need to come to some agreement. And I know a lot of people have tried to do this in the past where it's like, you know, having some kind of ethical, you know, cohort among a lot of these companies and coming together and saying like, these are the things that we're going to stand for and protecting users and blah, blah. And it hasn't really happened. It seems like people talk a big game. And then when it comes down to it, it's like, obviously the dollar wins out and it's easier to just slap an ad on something and collect somebody's data to get, you know, a couple $100,000 out of someone's lifespan.
Yeah. And, you know, I would argue that you don't need targeted ads.
I agree.
Because if you think about it, who do targeted ads help? Okay. They help a small niche business who's looking for a specific type of person. Okay. In a general, like a large company, like a large, I don't really know what I'm trying to say here, but a place that is trafficked by a general audience like Facebook. I mean, there's majority of the human population is on Facebook. It helps them because then they can micro-target those little niches on their huge platform. But if you didn't have targeted ads, that wouldn't help them, and that wouldn't help the small business. But the small business, if they're savvy enough, could find those users or find those customers on other small niche maybe services that cater to those people. So, you know, I'm just thinking of like a blog that only talks about, I'm just going to keep going with the brown woven belt, but is like a belt blog and they talk about belts. So the belt company is going to advertise on the belt blog. They're not going to advertise on Facebook because there's not targeted ads. I still think my point being, whether it's good or not, is that I still think that you can find those niche audiences because the internet is so large.
Yes.
You can find where they are. Targeted ads just make it easy to have a large entity that has the entirety of the internet on it, effectively speaking, to do that targeting for you. But if you take out the targeted ads, you can do that without sacrificing the private data of those customers. And, you know, if you can do it right, you can have a direct relationship with those customers instead of they're just out in the ether somewhere.
Yes.
Coming to you.
And that was my point about content, right? It's so the companies, the actual like e-commerce sales sites, if they are only seeing themselves as just an e-commerce, people come here to buy a belt in this instance, then they're doing it wrong. They need to see themselves as an actual store, right? A storefront that not only do I sell these things, I'm also going to find ways of getting people to my store. And that is going to be through writing articles. I'm going to write content about fashion that may not have anything to do with my belt, but it's going to drive traffic. That organic search traffic is going to come because people are looking at the adjacent items to buying a belt. They're going to be looking at pants. They're going to be looking at the season fashion trends that are happening, right? And those are bigger audiences than just, like you're saying, a targeted ad. It's going to be much larger. Yeah, it takes more work, but I think you get quality customers. I think your return is going to be better because you're not just buying ads. You're paying someone to write content, and you're engaging with users.
So right before we recorded, I saw where Facebook decided, I don't think they've come out explicitly and said this, but they seem like they are going to go ahead and go with Apple's app tracking transparency rules. They don't seem to be concerned about it anymore. And in part of that article was saying that basically Facebook's kind of figured out that they don't necessarily need it, because at this point, Facebook is so big. What they've started to do is integrate like third parties into Facebook itself. So like Shopify shops, they made a deal with Shopify where Shopify shops can be bought inside of Facebook. So Facebook is going to end up becoming this one giant walled garden internet, okay, where you can buy things on there, you can play games on there, you can do everything without leaving Facebook, and then Facebook still has all that data that they get while you're on Facebook. They don't have to ask Apple for it. They don't have to ask Google for it. If you don't leave Facebook, they can do whatever they want in their little fiefdom there. And so that's, I think, what Google has, their solution is to figure out a different way to track people in these cohorts, which I still don't love, because you can't be in more than one cohort. So those have to be pretty specific. I mean, even if there's a lot of people in there, like, you know, they're going to be specific about, you know, who you are as a person. And then Facebook's plan of attack seems that, well, we'll just absorb the entire internet, so you don't have to leave Facebook. So we're your reality now.
Pretty complicated, man.
Yeah. Dark days ahead.
Yeah, maybe not. You know, things get pretty bad sometimes, and then it tends to overcorrect itself and then level out. And maybe that's what we'll get. You know, obviously the industry is moving faster than I think the mandate and policies are. And I think there was some of that even mentioned, I believe, in a show I watched back on the Joe Rogan show with Elon Musk, and him talking about some of the stuff with the cybernetics things, and how, you know, everything is continuing to progress so much faster, but there's not enough on our governmental side mandating it and slowing it down. But
don't get me started on Elon Musk.
I'm not saying like I'm a, you know, Elon Musk follower, but I did listen to
that. Musky.
Yeah. I did watch that show, and it was interesting to hear some of those thoughts and opinions about, you know, because I've always had my thoughts and theories on where we're going with technology. But I do hope we do catch up and we do put some really good mandates down to protect people the best that we can, because you have to think, it's not just companies that are out to mess with us. There's people too, in very bad groups that are also trying to get your data, mess with you and stuff too. So hopefully we can get to a safer internet space in the future.
Yeah. And I mean, the internet was founded on, you know, basically decentralization of resources. The network grows organically. And I think what we've seen since the 90s is a capitalization of the internet. And I think now it is kind of settled to a couple very large groups of companies, and something is going to have to be done, I think, to those companies, or the creation of decentralized internet services and infrastructure has to proliferate a lot easier. I don't know if that is, you know, just a a technical problem on making it easier for, you know, people to set up their own things like micro.blog instead of Twitter. You know, when we had blogs before we had Facebook, but then Facebook made it easy for everybody to get in on the internet and shout into the ether. So I long for the days when the internet is still connected, but decentralized, so it's not held in control by like three or four giant companies. Because, I mean, if you go to search, where do you go? You go to Google. Like,
you don't search, you Google things.
Yeah, you Google things. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And if, like you were saying earlier, Ryan, like, you know, companies need to write blogs so that they have better SEO, so that they can show up in search results, so that people can find them. Well, Google dictates that. And Google changes how you can be found on the internet. I mean, the internet is so huge, it's not just a list on Alta Vista like it used to be. So,
Yeah, and their algorithms change, and they post, you know, a lot of, like, here's what's changing with their algorithms. And that's why I was saying, like, it's not easy to keep up with those trends, and you have to have content people that is their job. So I get it, and I get why small businesses, like, that's why they go to ads, and that's why, you know, they target people. But yeah, I think, man, we're in an interesting time, like you're saying. It's like that weird in between. It's like the internet's a weird teenager trying to figure out who it is. It's yelling at dad, you know, saying, let me out of here. I'm going to do what I want. And, you know, and it's like people are pulling it back and forth. And at some point, it's going to have to get a job and figure out what it's going to do with its life.
Well, I think it did get a job. It got a suit and a tie, and it decided to steal all of its dad's money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think the analogy broke down.
A little bit. Analogies always do.
But, yeah, I mean, I could talk about this, I think, forever, but just kind of ramble in circles. So any closing thoughts?
Well, I think we all just agree. We just want a safe space to play in and protect ourselves and our families and such from, you know, too much stuff being out there.
Yeah, and if you haven't read 1984, read 1984.
And then go ahead and just purchase your mountain retreat now.
Yeah, your bunker. No, don't do that.
Not a bunker, a mountain retreat. It's, you know, same.
Oh, okay, mountain retreat. Yeah, so I guess that's pretty much it for what we're going to talk about this week. Thinking ahead, we're going to start doing I don't think we have a name for it. So if you can come up with a name for it, we'll consider it. Send it to hashtag Ask Diversion on Twitter. But for right now, a club, a media club, or a book club, or a movie club, some sort of recurring segment. We may do monthly, we may do more often, less often, we haven't really decided. But the first thing is, since we've been talking about the new Marvel, the new MCU movies that are going to be coming out over the next couple years, they're about a lot of characters that aren't necessarily the main characters in the Marvel Universe, as we talked about last week, with Mephisto and things like that. So, that being said, one of those movies is The Eternals, and there's a good 7-issue arc by Neil Gaiman that I'm going to suggest that we read, and then we'll talk about it in, I guess, about a month or so. And, you know, that'll help us, you know, start to understand these characters and get excited and get prepared for these movies. So yeah, if you'd like to follow along with us, I'll put a link in the show notes to Amazon where you can go ahead and buy a copy of The Eternals. If you'd like to read it with us when we discuss it, you'll be ready and not be spoiled by anything. I've already read it. It's actually pretty good, but I'm going to read it again. The other guys are going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it in a couple weeks. I'm going to say 4 weeks from now, whenever that is. So 4 episodes. And, you know, we'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon if you buy it through the link. So if you like the show and you want to help us out, yeah, just buy it through there. So.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Get to reading.
All right. Well, I guess that's all we've got this week. So say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Catch you on the flip side.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.